When Mark asked me to speak to you today about the failure of the educational system in meeting the needs of the blind, my first question was, how long will I have? I could stand here all day enumerating the flaws in the current system, but I'd be preaching to the choir. This crowd, more than any other I could address, understands the problem our children face. Some of you have blind children. Some of you were blind children. Some of you teach blind children. Many of you have experienced the failure of the educational system in meeting the needs of the blind, and those who haven't experienced it certainly have heard about it. I, too, have experienced this failure. People may look at me and the other parents on the boards of Texas Parents of Blind Children and the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children and think, wow, these parents really have it together. They're part of the NFB. They know what it takes for a blind person to be successful. I'll bet their kids are getting the best services available. Wrong. Knowing what your child needs and getting what your child needs are two very different things. We've had and continue to have our challenges. Let me give you just a few examples. One national board member has a daughter in elementary school. Kendra was in the first grade last year. She's incredibly bright and reads at a fourth grade level. She reads Braille faster than 86% of sighted first grade students read print. Yet Kendra's parents were told that she didn't qualify for the gifted program in spite of having standardized test scores ranging from the 96th to the 99th percentile for first graders. After 2 months of trying to use logic and the law with the school system, Kendra's parents requested a mediator. At that point, the district decided that maybe Kendra did qualify for the gifted program after all. But should it have been that hard? This is an example of blatant discrimination in general education. Would a sighted child with the same reading level, reading speed, and standardized test scores be denied acceptance into the school's gifted program? No. Kendra's parents knew that, but knowing wasn't enough to prevent the problem. Another national board member has a son in junior high. David began missing school during the fourth and fifth grades for headaches that his parents were told were due to sinus infections. A couple of days at home each time seemed to solve the problem. In the sixth grade, the problem worsened. A few days off now and then no longer helped, and the headaches were constant. David lost about 3 months of school that year. The diagnosis didn't come quickly. David's parents consulted numerous specialists, and he underwent MRIs, CAT scans, a lumbar puncture, and drug treatments. Finally, a doctor correctly diagnosed the problem. David had occipital neuralgia. This is what the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke says about the condition. Occipital neuralgia is a distinct type of headache characterized by piercing, throbbing, or electric shock-like chronic pain in the upper neck, back of the head, and behind the ears, usually on one side of the head. This pain is caused by irritation or injury to the occipital nerves, which can be the result of trauma to the back of the head, pinching of the nerves by overly tight neck muscles, compression of the nerve as it leaves the spine due to osteoarthritis, or tumors or other types of lesions in the neck. So what does this have to do with the education of blind children? Well, therein lies the cause of David's problem. Because he was blind, his teacher saw no reason why he shouldn't be seated facing a wall, instead of facing forward like the rest of the class. Their reasoning was that it prevented the cords from his equipment from growing across the floor and creating a hazard for the other students. He didn't need to be seated by the corded equipment, but they thought it would be more convenient. David had to turn his head constantly to face the front of the class. After several years of this, he developed occipital neuralgia, which caused him constant pain and months out of school. This is another example of discrimination and ignorance in general education. Would a sighted child be expected to sit in a desk facing the wall? No. David's parents knew that, but knowing wasn't enough to prevent the problem. A Texas board member has a daughter who just graduated from high school and is currently receiving training at the Louisiana Center for the Blind. Before she starts college in January to pursue a degree in teaching. Kaylee did well in high school. She was an honor student, active in choir and drama. She's the secretary of the Texas Association of Blind Students. She's also an NFB scholarship winner. She must have received the very best services, right? Wrong. When Kaylee graduated, her visual reading rate was around 160 words per minute. Most seniors in high school read between 250 and 350 words per minute. Her braille reading rate was 40 words per minute. This may sound slow until you realize that she didn't receive any braille instruction in school until she was a senior in high school. For years, Kaylee and her parents knew she needed braille. She even began teaching herself braille through a Hadley course, but her teachers wouldn't listen. To borrow a theme from Carol Castellano's wonderful speech at last year's convention, the teacher said, "This child doesn't need braille. This child is not blind." This is another example of ignorance, this time in special education. Would a sighted child who reads more than 100 words per minute less than her peers be denied services that would help her increase her reading speed? No. Kaylee's parents knew that, but knowing wasn't enough to solve the problem. What's really scary about these examples of ignorance and discrimination in the education system is that they're true stories about the children of parents active in the NFB. These parents have the attitude, the information, the support, and the mentors that their kids need, and they still have to fight tooth and nail year after year to ensure that their kids get a quality education. What about the other parents out there who've never even heard of the NFB? What about the parents who don't know what their kids need? What kind of services are their kids getting? I can't tell you how many parents I meet who are thrilled to have found the NFB, but who are filled with regret over the years that have gone by that their child didn't have a cane, or wasn't learning braille, or didn't believe that it was okay to be blind. The current educational system is failing to educate too many of our blind students. My fellow panelists and I have given many examples of this, and I'm sure there are dozens more examples that the people in this room could give. We know there's a problem, but knowing isn't enough. We need action. To solve the problem, we need to understand the root cause, and here's where it gets a little tricky. Humans love to assign blame. We say, if blind kids aren't learning, the teachers are to blame. But there are excellent teachers out there, and we all know that those who are not are usually only teaching what they've been taught. Okay, then we say teacher preparation programs are to blame. But again, there are good programs out there, and you really can't blame a program. Someone developed the program, someone decreed that it was sufficient, so are they to blame? How about the people who set the curriculum, or set the standards, or prepare the materials? Are they to blame? I'd like to propose that we don't blame anyone, but that instead we step up to the plate and do something about it. When I started researching for this speech, I found a wonderful article in an old Future Reflections magazine that really stood out to me in its simplicity in listing 9 specific things that constitute a good education for blind children. I'd like to read that list, slightly abbreviated, to you now. Number 1, blind people, given the proper training and opportunity, can compete on a basis of equality with their sighted peers. This should be the basic philosophy for any programs, standards for programs, or evaluation of programs for the blind. Number 2, it is respectable to be blind. Blind should be restored to the vocabulary of educators and used frequently. Number 3, all blind children, including legally blind children who have some vision, should learn to read and write Braille. Number 4, all Braille users should learn to use the slate and stylus as early as possible and be required to use it regularly. Number 5, teachers of blind children should be required to demonstrate proficiency in reading and writing Braille. Number 6, all blind children should be given a long white cane and instruction in its use. Upon enrollment in school, if not before, the cane should be with the child throughout the day. Number 7, sleep shades, eye covers, should be routinely used when alternative techniques such as cane travel or braille are being taught to children with partial vision. Number 8, educators should work with the organized blind to expose blind children of all ages to competent, knowledgeable blind adult role models. Number 9, special education teachers of the blind should be required as a part of their professional growth and continuing education to attend conferences or conventions of blind consumers. That pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? We may all have one or two things we'd like to add to the list, but I think we can safely say that if we want our blind children to succeed, that list of nine things is a pretty good start. So there you have it, problem solved. But before we pack it up and go home, here's a sobering fact. That list was written by my friend, mentor, and longtime president of the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, Barbara Cheadle, in 1985. That list was written 25 years ago. We knew then what our kids needed. We knew what constituted a good education for blind children. Yet the educational system is still failing too many of our blind children. The news isn't all bad. The NFB has made huge strides in the 25 years since that list was written, including fighting and winning the battle to have a Braille provision in IDEA, securing provisions in IDEA to ensure that textbooks are delivered on time, creating a certification process for teachers that assesses Braille competency, developing a new learning media assessment that isn't biased towards print, initiating a teacher recruitment and mentoring program, advocacy and consultations for countless families struggling in the IEP process, and sponsoring a groundbreaking Braille Research Summit that brought professionals and blind consumers together with a common goal. These are only a few examples of what the NFB has done and is doing to improve the education of blind students, and we've seen results. Many of our blind kids succeed due to excellent services or in spite of poor services. This year's class of scholarship winners is living proof of that. But we want that success for all. We want the right to equal opportunity for each and every one of our blind children. My daughter, Lindsay, will turn 8 in 2 days. I want a good education for her, and I know it's not guaranteed. That's one of the reasons I recently changed careers. After working 17 years as a biomedical engineer in the aerospace industry, I rethought my priorities, and I'm now in the last class of my master's program in special education. I hope to follow that by being certified as a teacher of blind students. I was honored to be part of an educational reform task force which met in Baltimore in June. I can assure you there was hope in that room, and not just hope, but conviction. Dr. Maurer committed the power of the NFB to solving this problem now. He made it very clear that knowing what our blind children need isn't enough. We need action. No longer will we be content to chip away at the problem, solving one issue at a time or helping one family at a time. No longer will we stand by while the system continues to fail so many of our children. We are waging a battle here, and the National Federation of the Blind has decided that it's time to go all out. The military has a name for the kind of attack we're planning: shock and awe. It's shock and awe time. We're coming at this problem from all directions. Teachers, training, standards, curriculum, policy, assessments, research, and leadership development. We're developing a multi-level, systemic approach to initiate wide-ranging and long-lasting change in our educational system. We're taking action. We will reach families of blind children and the professionals who serve them earlier. We will find more good teachers and more good programs, and if we can't find them, we'll make them. We will form relationships with professionals in the blindness field and will get them to our trainings and our conventions as part of their professional development. We will raise expectations and standards for all blind students. The road will be long and there will be obstacles, but we didn't choose this fight because it would be easy. We chose this fight because knowing what our blind children need isn't enough. We won't rest until they get what they need. Thank you.